Thank you, Kelsey, and thanks to the organizers for putting together an interesting group of presentations in today's symposium, and also for the invitation to be here and present today. Now, my presentation is going to bring two differing perspectives to the table in terms of how we might look at the needs for conducting environmental fate studies for genetically engineered plants and the proteins they express. The first perspective is from my role as a soil environmental chemist who looks at these types of products as being very unique opportunities for us to probe the reactivity of chemicals in the soil environment so they can very usefully inform our broader understanding of fundamental reactivity and the processes that remove chemicals from the environment. My other perspective is that of a risk analyst, and from that perspective, I'm interested in using a very focused and targeted approach to these studies so that the data which are generated from environmental fate studies can usefully inform the environmental risk assessment process. And I think that's the one aspect that we really need to look at more closely, is to make sure that we are asking for the relevant type of data in order to make informed decisions regarding the environmental fate and behavior and its implications, the overall environmental risk. So in my presentation this afternoon, I'm going to be talking first a little bit about the problem formulation process, because the problem formulation process is a critical aspect of the overall environmental risk assessment, and that is also true for those aspects of the environmental risk assessment that depend on environmental fate data. So we use problem formulation to identify what relevant questions need to be addressed in the subsequent data generation and interpretation. In order to make that work, we need to use a tiered process. And I think the idea of tiered processes, although we heard in the earlier presentation, have worked out fairly well for the CRI proteins. As we move to other types of proteins, we need to ask whether or not that tiered process, going from a lab study to a post-registration accumulation study in the field, is really adequate to target studies as they should. And then finally, we need to understand aspects of the laboratory study design. My bias is that the laboratory studies are the critical aspect of the environmental fate data generation, and we must have study designs that allow for robust environmental risk assessment to occur and occur well in advance of the environmental risk. It serves little purpose, in my mind, for us to find problems arising in validation studies in the field post-commercialization. We need to be making a lot of the determinations prior to the commercial release. So our understanding of what type of data might be needed in a given case or a given context is driven by what we're dealing with. And in our laboratory, we're working with a variety of different exemplifying cases. The CRI proteins, which are probably most relevant to the interests of individuals in the audience today. But we're spending a lot of our time looking at plants that are expressing unique types of proteins and where the plants are being used as manufacturing platforms, for example, to produce and accumulate pharmaceutical actives, or to produce industrial enzymes that can be used as processing aids for allowing for crops to be effectively transformed into biofuels. So we need to understand the case attributes of the specific proteins we're dealing with, their expression, the environment in which they're going to be delivered in order to arrive at the appropriate analytical scheme under which we would determine what kind of environmental data might be needed. So I wanted to touch base on problem formulation. As I said, it is critical. It allows us to focus on the changed attribute in the genetically engineered plant. And this is going to be a protein, and we want to consider the uniqueness of that protein in the environment where it will be introduced upon commercialization. And so we always begin with just understanding what that expression level is and the way that the material will find its ultimate fate in the soil environment, whether that's through pollen moving into the soil, through crop residues that remain after harvest, through root and biomass or whatever. That allows us to come up with an estimate of the estimated environmental exposure in terms of loading of that protein that might occur in the soil. And based on that loading, we can then move on to determine whether more relevant information might need to be generated in terms of environmental fate parameters, such as degradation, half-lives, estimates of absorptivity, and such. All of this, then, is driven by the anticipated consequences of the exposure. We don't do these exposure studies, these very complex to design and execute studies on environmental fate, without having some idea of a relevant consideration, a consequence that will arise out of the protein occurring in the environment at the levels that we project on our initial estimates coming out of the problem formulation. So a couple of quick examples of where this might lead you in different directions. If we're concerned with yet another cry protein, there are a number of cry proteins that have been commercialized. We have a whole host of regulatory as well as published research on all aspects of the biology, the environmental fate, the ecotoxicity, as well as a number of relevant environmental risk assessments. These help us understand that if we are working with a new cry protein or a new use of an existing cry protein that fits within our current understanding, it's going to point to limited issues with regard to persistence and accumulation. And so in a case like this, it would be probably wise to use a very restricted amount of testing in order to validate understanding that already exists broadly within the scientific and regulatory communities. A contrasting example might be something like industrial enzymes, which are now being targeted for production in plants, as I said, for bioprocessing. And existing knowledge here says, well, we're now introducing into the soil environment unique types of enzymes that have activities and some type of comparability, if you will, to enzymes that exist in agricultural soils naturally. And these enzymes that exist naturally in soils may be absorbed to soil surfaces, or they may be due to biotic activities. What we see with these types of unique proteins, which have not to date been deeply studied, is that existing knowledge points to uncertainties regarding the environmental fate and effect, and therefore the environmental risk assessment process may require some modicum more of information in order to understand the implications of the environmental fate. So in order to properly target what the problem formulation indicates may be needed in terms of testing and analysis, we should undertake a stepwise process, a tiered process, which appropriately targets the data we generate to the degree of uncertainty or the lack of knowledge we might have in a given instance. And so what we're currently doing in my laboratory, working predominantly with the pharmaceutical and industrial enzymes, is to try to develop a logical stepwise process that can help us in this regard, starting with fundamental characterization of the proteins, information that's readily available very often early in the development process, using that to predict the interaction of a unique protein with colloids in the soil environment to understand whether or not it's going to be destabilized, inactivated, or otherwise. We can follow that on with basic studies that would, if need, indicate whether or not these proteins are actually labile in terms of proteolysis, hydrolysis, temperature labile nature, things of this nature. If warranted, then, due to our uncertainties, that would lead us to the environmental fate studies themselves that would tell us something about the degradation and the persistence of these in typifying soils. And all of this would have to be assessed relevant to some relevant impact on critical soil processes. I think it's fairly clear that for most of the types of transgenic proteins that have been dealt with and we are dealing with, it's very, very difficult to see a toxic effect on non-targets that's driving our concerns. Our concerns may be to other aspects, such as for an industrial enzyme, how it may impact carbon turnover, nutrient cycling, things of this type. So here's an example of what we're trying to institute as a first tier. This is in a proof of concept stage, and it's going to need a lot of development. We're trying to characterize fundamental attributes and interactions of a unique protein with the soil environment. And here we're showing some of our initial modeling where we're placing our protein within a water box that simulates the soil solution, and we're trying to understand through these molecular dynamic simulations how labile this protein is going to be to inactivation within the soil environment, and also ultimately we'll be adding colloids into this mix to understand how these proteins are interacting with the colloidal components in the soil. Now we have a long ways to go before this proof of concept works out, but in essence what we're talking about is something analogous to what's been used for many years with chemicals and their fate in the environment, and that's structure-activity relationships as a first estimate of how the ultimate fate of these types of products may be seen in the environment. So that's the goal yet to be proven in this area. So in terms of, let's turn to the environmental fate studies themselves, because that's really the crux of what I wanted to present today. And really we're torn between the idea of doing laboratory studies and field studies. And we see that EPA is using a mix of both. I told you already my bias is more in the area of laboratory studies. What we're really talking about when we pick one alternative to the other is a balance of control with laboratory studies, realism with field studies, the ability to predict with laboratory studies, the ability to validate in field studies. And so for decision-making impact, I'm interested in the laboratory studies because as indicated in this example of a typical development timeline for a new genetically engineered crop, we have the opportunity to do the laboratory studies early on, and we're not going to be able to do robust field studies until we have commercialized, and so we can only validate. A problem that occurs at that time is going to be hard to deal with, and so we want to be able to have robust, relevant environmental fate studies conducted in the laboratory early so that we have strong predictive ability in our environmental risk assessments. Laboratory study design then is really critical for understanding the complexity of these studies and getting our heads around how we might do them. I'm showing just a suite of design considerations that came to me as I thought through this problem. It's not exhaustive by any means. The first two relate to the actual product itself. We're interested in the protein, the way it's being expressed in the plant, how it's going to be delivered into the environment, and what appropriate comparators we might want to use in terms of the proteins we're investigating. So for example, in our work with industrial enzymes, we're comparing them to similar enzymes that occur naturally in soil, similar in terms of the processes they catalyze. Then we can go on to a whole host of things that relate to, so these first two relate to the test material you're working with. The rest of them relate to the test system, the soil itself, and how we arrive at appropriate test systems that we can interpret in terms of their relevance to the overall environment. So here's an example of what I mean from the standpoint of the test material and exposure attributes. This is some work that came out of Joel Coates' lab. Hiro Kusaki, who worked there, looked at a pharmaceutical active, E. coli endotoxin submutant B, and he looked at the native protein expressed from a bacterial source and compared that to the transgenic expressed material that's targeted to the starch endosperm in the corn grain. And so if you will, if you think about it in the sense of a pesticide, it's like we're formulating it within a starch granule and delivering it to the environment there. So in both cases, we see that in these laboratory studies, the protein is labile to degradation. But the way that the protein is being delivered into the environment and the duration of the persistence is somewhat different. And so we'd need to factor that in as we would determine how to best interpret the results of our environmental fate studies. Soil heterogeneity is really the crux of the problem we deal with in trying to do effective studies, regardless of whether we're doing them in the laboratory or in the field. We need to have strong rationale for the soils that we select. As a risk assessor, I'm interested in selecting the typifying dominant soils within the intended use area. As a scientist, I might look at soils with unique properties, end members, to better understand some of the fundamental natures of the reactivity. But as a risk assessor, I'm really interested in typifying soils. The reason we need to be concerned about soil heterogeneity is that key soil properties really drive microbial activity and chemical reactivity of chemicals in the soil environment. And soils are biologically and physicochemically complex system. I've listed a bunch of gross characteristics of soils here, and they're all interrelated, they're correlated. And so you're not going to be able to take three soils and be able to talk about all soils in nature. We need to be very selective as to how we're interpreting this data. Two ways we might do it: as a scientist, we might work with pure bench scale studies, where we might use an isolated soil component and looking at protein reactivity, for example, on a isolated soil clay or humic materials. As a risk assessor, however, I think it's more important that we use whole soils, but we properly characterize those soils and report that characterization as we report the results of our environmental fate studies. If this is really something that disturbs me a great deal as a risk assessor, I go out in the published literature or in reports in environmental risk assessments and want to interpret these results more broadly as to the context, overall context. And very often, there's very little that's said at all with regard to what the nature of the soil was, other than to say, well, we worked with a high clay soil from Iowa. That is not sufficient for a robust environmental risk assessment down the road. And so what I'm showing you here is a table that comes out of the Kasaki paper, which I would consider to be the base, the bare minimum information that you would have to have in order to properly characterize your test system. The other point I have here is that we need to be quite concerned to especially control or report the temperature and moisture conditions of either lab or field studies, because this is going to have an overriding importance on any degradation and reactivity information that we might see. What we're trying to get at is understanding for these proteins how they're partitioning and reacting in the soil environment, because we can find these proteins in active forms not only in the plant residues when they enter the environment, perhaps in the soil solution, but also labile phases where they're absorbed at least for some period of time after they've been added to the soil, and so we need to try to tease this out. It's not easy to do. This is an example for two chemical pesticides, some work that we did many years ago, where we looked at a suite of approximately 20 soils and measured the degradation half-life in laboratory setting. And these molecules differed subtly, and one was degraded entirely by microbial action, the other by multiple routes of degradation, both chemical and microbial. You can see for the stressor A in red that it's got a very broad range in half-lives, whereas that for the stressor B is very narrow. And if we wanted to describe these populations of soils in terms of their inherent ability to degrade these compounds, for stressor A, I would need 8 soils out of that population in order to statistically describe that distribution, whereas for the other molecule, 4 soils are going to do the job. And so we're not going to work with this many soils in most of our studies, but we need to understand the ramifications of those soils we select in terms of the data we generate and how we interpret it. So I've pointed out a number of considerations. There are many more that come to bear, and these need to be, I believe, thought through more carefully in the problem formulation as we conduct our environmental fate studies. And so what I've tried to show you in the last few minutes is that we need to start any robust consideration of environmental fate of transgenic plant proteins through problem formulation to identify relevant questions, through use of a tiered process that appropriately targets the studies to the level of uncertainty or lack of data that we might have, and we need to have an important consideration of laboratory study designs to allow for robust data generation that's relevant to the environmental risk assessment process. With that, I want to thank you. I'll mention very briefly in closing my co-authors today. This is the group that's been working with me on a variety of this effort at Iowa State University. My co-authors today are Tanner Zinn, who is mentoring our work group on the molecular dynamics modeling, Dr. Ali Tabatahai, who's a well-respected soil biochemist who is assisting us in our overall design of experiments, and Yong Tran, my graduate student who's working on the pharmaceutical actives. Thanks again.
We have time for questions.
Any questions? Yes.
It's been my observation, having worked in the area of bioremediation,
John, those are good observations, and I'll just add to that is that I think that we do have advances that need to be made in test system designs and selection. But for the meantime, what we really need to do is make sure we characterize these soils. And unfortunately, once you get out of soil science, I'm a soil scientist, we find that other types of environmental scientists very often fail to do this characterization, and they treat the soil sort of as a lump, if you will, and really do not recognize its heterogeneous nature and those components it has that govern its reactivity. Any other questions, comments? Thank you once more.